Might be a good time to take any questions or comments. Some of you were here last week and perhaps started a daily meditation practice starting on the breath. And if you have any questions or comments about how it went, yes.
As I observe my breath, I notice that there's all these constrictions around it, and I can't stand it, so I start altering my breath.
Oh.
I'm not just watching, I'm actually like, oh, it's all tight here, and I'm trying to take deeper breaths. And are you supposed to, I know you're just supposed to observe and watch. And
right.
I mean, my breath is so shallow, and it's not, like, it feels almost like something like I'm suffocating.
Right, could well be.
So just keep watching and try not to alter it? The
basic instructions in mindfulness practice is just to watch. Just be present for it. Feel it as it is. Sense it. Be present for it. But don't try to alter it. And also, notice any tendency you have of judging it. This is, I'm in California. In California, you're supposed to have a long, deep breath. And it's very important to notice these judgments we have, because they're really extra. They're the extra burden we add on top of our experience. And our experience is a lot easier to deal with if we don't judge it. And something as innocent as our breathing in meditation, you don't have to judge that. So notice that tendency to judge and try not to believe the judging voice. Try to put it aside and not get caught up in it. And rather focus on just keep being with your breath. Just be with your breath as it is. If it's uncomfortable, that's okay. It doesn't have to be comfortable. Many of us have a strong tendency of manipulating our life. We're living constantly in reaction to things, whether we like them or don't like them. We're manipulating, kind of fixing things or trying to run away from things or trying to judge things. And often that activity happens in relationship to our self-identity, how we like to see ourselves. So, in California, it's not cool to have a shallow breath. So suddenly you're comparing yourself to others. And that activity of constant manipulation, anxious manipulation, and especially doing so in relationship to the self, is unnecessary. And if you're using that tendency to manipulate in order to fix the problem, you're just compounding it. So what we try to do in mindfulness is step outside of the whole system, outside of the whole game of self-building, self-identity, manipulation, adjusting, running away from things, holding on to things. We try to step outside of the whole system and then just simply watch it. So the watching is very powerful, because, as one popular expression these days, it's a form of stepping outside the box. So, as I say, and some people are so sick of that term, but the idea of stepping outside of the box is you can, by stepping outside of the normal patterns of thought and patterns of activity, you can see your situation much more clearly, come up with some new idea. So just watching is very, very radical. Other questions before we start today? Yes?
I wasn't here last week, so I don't know quite what you've covered, but if you tend to be really sleepy, like all the time, do you sort of just meditate through the sleepiness as best you can? Or is it a crutch to say, I'm going to take a nap and then I'm going to meditate? To be sort of attached to the idea that you're not ready to meditate until you've done some preparation.
That's a good question. If you notice that you're always sleepy, then you need to do some investigation about that and look at your life in a wider way. And it's possible that you have sleep deficit, in which case maybe what you need is to go to sleep earlier or get up later or take a nap much more than you need to meditate. If you feel like you get enough rest in your life, enough sleep, And the only time that sleep visits you is when you meditate. Every time you sit down to meditate, you find yourself falling asleep. Then there's a number of things to do. One is to simply... It's very important when you sit down to meditate that you do so with some commitment, so that no matter what happens during your sitting, within reason, if your house is burning down, you should get up. But within reason, that for that period of time that you've said you're going to sit and meditate, that you're going to actually sit there and be present for whatever arises. And not let anything convince you to break that period of meditation. So suddenly you hear the telephone ring, and you know, you hear someone talking into your message machine, and you really would like to talk to that person, but you're committed to staying there and being present. You're sitting in meditation, and your voice says, "This is the right time of year to clean the garage, and it needs to be right now." Or maybe I should have a snack, you know, or maybe I should take a nap. Once you sit down to meditate, it's really helpful. It's very, for the process, the spiritual process of mindfulness, to stay committed to that period. So if you're sleepy, then the basic thing we do is then bring mindfulness to the sleepiness. So you can let go of the breath, paying attention to the breath, and take the same kind of focus you had on the breath and bring it to bear on the physical sensations of sleepiness in the body. What does it feel like? And there's all these sensations in the body, and you can investigate them. And that investigation will either wake you up or not. And if not, that's fine. The trick in mindfulness is to bring your best mindfulness to bear on what's happening, knowing that when you're sleepy, it's not going to be so good, the effort, but it's the best effort you can muster. So just do your best and hang in there. There are some pragmatic things you can do. You can sit up straighter. You can open your eyes. Sometimes having your eyes open, maybe 45 degrees to the ground, looking down, kind of not focusing on anything, can bring some more energy into the system and keep you alert. Sometimes when I'm sleepy before I'm going to meditate, I'll go and wash my face with cold water. And if I'm really sleepy, I'll wash my face, my neck, my hands, and my feet. And that sounds kind of rouses me a little bit. If sleepiness persists only during meditation time and the rest of the day you're quite awake, then it's possible that one of the things you need to look at is there any is there something that you're not paying attention to? Because sometimes sleepiness is a form of self-protection or some kind of protection where some deep memory or very strong unresolved feelings are beginning to surface. Because in meditation, the surface mind, the surface chatter of the mind that kind of keeps the undercurrents of our mind kind of at bay, kind of quiets down. And if the surface chatter quiets down, it gives a chance for the deeper material to finally surface. And sometimes years of repressed material can bubble up in meditation. And people often think, well, I feel more agitated because, you know, after I started meditating, because I must be doing it wrong. And it might not be the case at all. It's actually a great thing to begin allowing this deeper inner stuff to surface. But sometimes the psyche is not ready for it. And so it protects itself by falling asleep. And so either you trust that process, you trust the body, that it's okay to fall asleep and the body will know when to wake up. Or you can begin looking in the corners of your experience. Is there something here you're not attending to, something which wants to be expressed? Some feeling, some memory or something. So those are some things. If maybe the people on the floor could just come and sit a little bit closer. People are still coming in, and so they could find space in the back. Thank you. So, one of the things we're doing with mindfulness and mindfulness meditation is synchronizing, harmonizing the body and the mind. So, if you come to meditate, and your body is here, and your mind is still at work, thinking about some conversation you had there or something you had to do, then your mind is in one place and your body is a different place. If your mind is spinning off in thoughts about the future, about fantasy, whatever, it misses what's going on here in the present moment. Now, sometimes in life that's quite innocent. But often what happens with people is the mind races ahead of ourselves, of our body, of our lived experience. So we're not really living in our experience, but rather we've taken up residency in our thinking about things. And so it becomes a life of aboutness, about what I'm going to do, about what happened yesterday, about the conversation I'm going to have, about a conversation that happened, about a wish that I have, a desire that I have. And we race after the thoughts we have. And the thoughts can get very fast and very busy. And sometimes we help it along by starting to live very busy lives, trying to multitask, for example, and running around doing many different things. And the mind gets fed then, kind of a speediness in the mind. And it takes a while. And the mind is then speeding along quite merrily on its own after a while, with very little connection to our lived immediate experience, our physical experience. So it can be a surprise to some people at the end of a day or whenever to finally stop all their incessant activity and movements of their mind. And it can be a surprise to discover how tense their body is. They're carrying tension in their shoulder and their stomach. They weren't quite aware of the headache that was creeping up until they actually stopped and they were surprised, oh, I have a headache here. What we want to do is to bring our mind and body together so they're operating harmoniously together. Our body carries a lot of useful information about our experience, about how we relate to the world around us, how we relate to the world inside of us. If we're lost in our thoughts, in the world of aboutness, then we don't have available to us the information of the body. So this is as simple as, if you can notice when your shoulders begin going up in a conversation, then you can find out, you can notice that that's an indication that maybe you're beginning to be anxious. And it's a little bit of information there available in your shoulders. Or your stomach has gotten into knots. There's information there about what your reaction is inside. The body has a whole slew of cues about what's going on. If you feel loving towards someone, it's possible that sometimes love is confused with all kinds of wishful thinking. And then we're often lost in our heads. But if we drop down into our body, there's a whole other level of information available in our body. Sometimes that tells us, is this a heartfelt connection with a person? Or is it more of a genital connection to the person? You know, what is operating here? If we're lost in our wishful thinking, we might not notice where the propulsion is coming from. The body is a wonderful part of our life. Buddhist spirituality focuses a lot on living in our body and through our body. So much so that Buddhist spirituality is founded on being grounded in your body. Without some groundedness in your body, it becomes a little bit difficult, dangerous, maybe even unrealistic to move into some of the more refined forms of practice that Buddhism has to offer. So to synchronize our body and mind, to learn to train ourselves so that we don't forget this home we have in our body. There's a Utney Reader article many years ago that was titled "The Body: Friend, Foe, or Total Stranger." And if anything, the Buddhist approach is to have is to discover a friendly relationship to our body, to discover, you know, how to live in our body in a useful way. One way to live at a distance from our body is to live caught up in body image, which is a lot of what people in our society are caught up in. If you look at some of these fashion magazines, for example, and the fashion models, I mean, they're quite lovely to see how thin they can be. And but then a phenomenal number of women in America then compare themselves to those models. And then they feel bad about themselves because their body image isn't quite like that of the models. And they haven't. Many of us don't notice that popular body images changes not as fast as fashion in clothes, but they go through fashions. You know, certain kind of body types are. I don't know what types are going to be popular this decade. It hasn't obvious to me yet. But in the 90s, there was a particular kind of body type for women that was like the right one, I guess. In the 80s, it was a little bit different. In the 70s, it was different. In the 60s, it was different. In the 50s, it was different. And Marilyn Monroe just wouldn't be sexy anymore nowadays compared to that kind of body type. What I'm trying to get across here is that we often live in our body image. We're concerned. We focus at our body through the image of, you know, my nose is too big or too short, my hair is this, or I don't have enough hair. And so then we often, then more often than not, are critical of ourselves or live in the world of comparative thinking about our body. There's a whole different way of living in our body, which is not from the outside in, not looking at the body like how the body appears in a mirror, but to live on the inside of the body, feeling our body from the inside. And the chances are, for most of us, that once we start feeling the body from the inside, how the body actually feels itself, it'll feel much more friendly and much more a place like we can feel at home, much more right about how things are than if we live kind of externally, looking at it in a sense like looking at it in the mirror. The body is a lovely place to be. It's one of the greatest delights I've had in my years of Buddhist practice is to learn how to live in my body. One more thing I'll say as an introduction. I have, you know, lots of desires. I think I'm kind of a desire type person, so I have no shortage of desires. They seem to become quite easily to me, you know, the dime a dozen. And it's very easy. It's easy enough to get caught up in those desires, and then to see the world through the filters of those desires, which are often then through filters of thoughts and ideas of what I need and what I want. And if I get caught in the mental world of the desires, then I often feel kind of unsatisfied. I don't feel kind of so at home in myself. But the interesting thing is that if I settled back into my body, that I can discover relatively quickly a sense of contentment that seems to kind of take the power or the seduction away from the desire that arises. So, for example, if I want more food, if I'm basically, you know, filled, eaten enough, and I'm full, I can easily desire dessert. But if I drop into my body, I'll feel a contentment where actually I actually like that contentment and the desire doesn't take over. Sometimes the body is not a comfortable place to be, as you pointed out. Sometimes the body will contain a lot, will hold a lot of the conflicts that we live our life by. They have tension in the stomach, in the face, in the jaws, in the shoulders, anywhere in the body. Some of the conflicts of our lives, some of the tensions of our life can live. And so it can feel uncomfortable to be in the body. In Buddhist spirituality, it said it's more useful to be aware and present for that discomfort than it is to go back to unawareness, to not be aware. If it's happening anyway, you're much better off knowing it's there than continuing your life kind of ignoring its presence. One of the reasons for that is that awareness is very healing. And it kind of works a little bit like this, perhaps. If our mind is filled with thoughts and preoccupations, you can have 10,000 thoughts, you know, the mind can be fragmented and racing off in all kinds of thoughts and concerns at once. The mind is very crowded. And there's no room for the mind for anything to happen. But if we can create more room in the mind, in the body, through awareness, then there's room for things to begin to unravel, to relax. It's kind of like if you go into a really crowded elevator, you know, you kind of feel you scrunch up to kind of fit in there, and you don't even notice that you were tense to begin with because you're even tenser going in there. But if you go into a huge cathedral, it's a really spacious building, you're the only one there, and just all this space, and inspiring space, you can just relax, you know, and you can even start dancing and let things kind of go. Meditation helps us create room in the mind. By holding things in awareness and being present for things with awareness, it allows things to begin to unravel, to relax. So if we can simply hold in a non-judgmental, non-reactive way, the tensions, the conflicts, as they reside in the body, it gives a chance for those things to unwind. Some people would say it gives a chance for them to heal. So the body is a very important place to be when we meditate. So let's do, before I say anything else, let's do a little session of meditation. So take an alert but comfortable posture. Alert and relaxed. And that means perhaps sitting up a little bit straighter than you normally would, having the spine be a little bit more energetic and alive. Many of us don't pay much attention to our spine. But to sit in such a way that the spine feels alert. And then take a few moments to feel your body. Perhaps as if you've never discovered, never really paid attention to it before. Kind of taking a few moments to explore the body from the inside. What does it feel like in your body? There's no need to judge. And it's also, or if you judge, there's no need to believe your judgments about what you're experiencing. And if you tune into your body, what do you learn about yourself? What information is there in your body? Without thinking or analyzing so much, just feeling directly. How is it to be in your body? Is it comforting to be in your body, to be aware of it? Or is it uncomfortable? Both ways are fine. In order to synchronize the body and the mind, it helps to become familiar with your body, to do a little exploration, getting to know it as it is. And then to help both with the exploration of the body, but also to connect more fully with your inner bodily experience, it can be helpful at the beginning of a sitting to take a few long, slow, deep breaths, feeling the body as you breathe in, and then as you exhale, relax the shoulders, the belly. Just let go of any tension. And then let your breathing return to normal. Again, there's no right or wrong way to breathe. But stay connected with your body. The breathing is part of your bodily experience. And spend a few moments now exploring, getting to know what your body's experience of breathing is. How does your body experience breathing in, breathing out? What part of your body, where in your body do you feel the breathing most pronounced? Some people will feel it in their abdomen, the rising and falling of their belly. Some people will feel it in the chest, the rising and falling of the chest, the expansion and contraction. Some people might feel it more predominantly as the air passes in and out their nostrils. Or in the back of the throat. Kind of be curious for a few more moments of what your own bodily experience of breathing is like from the inside of the body. Kind of like you're exploring a cave in the dark and you're feeling with your hands the walls from the inside. Sensing and feeling from the inside of your body. If you have trouble finding your breath, then you can breathe a little bit more deeply. As you exhale, let go of any thoughts and concerns that you might have in favor of really feeling the out-breath as carefully as you can and really being there for the beginning of the in-breath. When you notice that your mind has wandered off in thought, which it inevitably will do, just notice that, and very simply, without judgment, or without believing your judgments, come back again to your breathing. Begin again with the breath. With a little effort to hang in there from one breath to the next. Staying with the body's experience of breathing, the breath within the breath. Can be a sense of settling into the breathing, settling into the body that breathes. synchronizing the mind and body by having the mindfulness centered on your breathing, on the bodily experience of breathing. Now, let go of the breath, of breathing, of paying attention to the breath, and instead bring your attention to the strongest sensation that exists in your body. It can be pleasant or unpleasant, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be that strong. Whatever happens to be the strongest sensation in your body. And then very gently lay your awareness on it. Put it in the middle of it. Just feel it and sense it. Take a good look at it. Not to make it go away or to judge it or to push it away. Not to resist it, but very gently, with non-reactive awareness, simply feel what that experience is like in its own right. Take a few moments to explore it, looking at it from different angles, feeling it different ways. Notice if it changes at all as you're present for it. Noticing the kind of sensations they make up that experience. Notice any tendency to judge the sensation, to get involved in thinking about it, making commentary about it, or any motivations to hold on to it or push it away. If the sensation disappears as you're watching it, go find the next strongest sensation in the body. Rather than getting involved in the thoughts and the judgments, continue to drop into the experience of the sensations. Letting the silence of the body hold the experience, and then come back again to your breathing, and then for one more minute, the last minute of the sitting, feel each breath, each in-breath and out-breath, as carefully as you can, so that the whole universe is just breathing. So, our breathing is a wonderful place to ground our meditation, our mindfulness practice. The breath, in a sense, is always happening, and so the breathing is a wonderful place to connect to our body, to connect to what's happening in the immediate lived moment. The breath is, for most of us, is constant. And so it's a place where we can develop some concentration, some stability. And just, no matter what else happens, we come back to the breathing and settle there. And slowly the breath tends to calm and steady the mind, the body, the heart. And you'll find the centrifugal force of thoughts that carry us away quiet down to some degree over time as we kind of focus on the breath. The body tends to become more relaxed. Some of the Buddhist teachers I studied with in Asia said that for some people, mindfulness of breathing, meditation on the breath, is the only meditation you need to do to get enlightened. It's so powerful and significant in its own right. In the mindfulness tradition, we use the breath as a useful, pragmatic foundation to steady the mind, to develop the mindfulness on something which is always there. We give some emphasis to the breath. We kind of give it some priority. We kind of try to stay with it and get to know it and be present for it. However, the breath is not the only thing we pay attention to. It's not the central focus. Rather, what we're trying to do is to develop mindfulness itself. And mindfulness is kind of like water. And you can pour water into any kind of container. At least a container that's open and empty. You can pour it, you know, so you can put it into a champagne glass, you can put it into a bottle, you can put it into a salad bowl, you can put it into, you know, whatever you kind of container you have, and it'll take the shape of the container. Mindfulness is free-flowing like that. It can fit into any of your experience. And hold the experience in a way that helps develop wisdom and insight and freedom. What we're trying to do is ultimately develop mindfulness, not necessarily become the world-class experts on what the breath is like. So what that means is that we tend to focus on the breath first. We try to develop our stability there, give priority to the breathing. But once the breath, once something else becomes more pronounced, more predominant than the breathing, some other experience, we let go of the breath and take that other experience up as the object of the meditative awareness. So, say for example, you're sitting being with your breathing and your knees begin to hurt. If your only instruction was to stay with the breath and your knee really hurts a lot, then there might arise in you a tension between your knee wanting your attention and you're trying to stay with the breathing. And so you're kind of maybe a split there. There's no need to have that kind of tension. What we do is we let go of the breathing and bring the meditative awareness onto the knee and feel what's there. And the knee is as good a place to develop mindfulness as the breath. What we're trying to do is develop this non-reactive, non-judgmental awareness of how things are in the knee. And if the sensation is physical pain, then within reason, if you don't think you're going to hurt yourself, damage yourself, within reason, you don't shift your posture, but you just hang out there, feeling that sensation, exploring it, seeing if you can hold it in non-reactive awareness. Many times we can't, if it's pain, for example. Then the trick is to simply notice our relationship to the pain. Notice that we're contracting or adding meaning to it. This knee pain must mean that I'm on the verge of losing my leg. It'll fall off if I sit one more moment. Or this knee pain must mean that I probably have cancer and I need to go to the doctor. But I can't afford to go to the doctor because I don't have health insurance. I don't have a job. And how is it that I, you know, don't have a job? And, you know, I keep losing these jobs. I can't seem to hold a job. And you know, I can't find any good jobs. And I have this bad karma with work. And it really begins with, you know, my parents and how they treated me. And they never taught me any good, you know, work, any really good work skills. And, you know, I really should, maybe I should go into the military. That's it. The military will teach me really good skills. You know, I can get some kind of nice job there and discipline. And all this is happening in the course of sitting in meditation, right? The mind and the body is not together anymore. Your mind is racing off into some other world. Before you know it, you're in Afghanistan. And all that's happening is you had a little bit of knee pain. So what we're trying to do is notice that tendency to react and get lost in the reactions. So we don't get lost in the reactions, and we can just stay and develop a stability, develop the synchronization in the mind and the body on this sensation in the knee, feeling it. And we want to explore it. We want to try to get to know it better. The focus of mindfulness is always, can I get to know this experience better? Not to think about it, not to get, you know, anxious about it, but can I sense my way more carefully into that experience? Can I sense my way into it so that the reactive, agitated mind quiets down? It's kind of like if you're maybe in the woods when it's dark and you hear a sound in the distance, just a little rustling someplace far away, you're not quite sure what it is. And your mind can start racing, of course. But if you really want to pay attention to that, you really quiet down. You really kind of listen with this great silence, you know, to really pay attention to it carefully. You want to let kind of a silent awareness sense and feel your way into that experience in the knee and just feel what those sensations are. And often, our physical sensations, especially if they're uncomfortable ones, look very different, are experienced very differently if we're really close to them than if we're far away from them. Be far away from them in our thoughts, they can just seem as it's like a pain can feel like this monumental kind of solid mass of pain. But if you really get close to it, you find out that mass of pain really is made up of many different sensations. And they're arising and passing, perhaps. They're moving around that little part of your body. They're fascinating kind of array of tension and tightness and stabbing and burning and wonderful sensations. And the closer and closer you get, the more impermanent they can seem. The further and further away you are from them, they seem to be very solid mass. And if we're relating to a solid mass of stuff, we tend to be relating to it through our ideas and thoughts, which is not so useful for the purposes of mindfulness practice. So, to say all this whole thing in a different way, it's useful, I think, to distinguish between foreground and background of awareness. We first sit down to meditate. We put the breath into the foreground of our awareness. And we let that kind of be the focal point of what we pay attention to. In the background of our awareness, there can be many different sensations, thoughts, ideas, feelings, sounds around. As long as they're in the background, it's fine to just leave them there. You don't have to pick them up or get involved. As long as the breath can be in the foreground, just stay with the breath. And knowing that that's a principle of meditation can make it a lot easier. Because as long as you can be connected to your breathing, you don't have to worry about other things going on particularly. Sooner or later, something from the background will push itself into the foreground. So for right now, we're talking about body sensations. At some point, experiences of your body will become more pronounced, will kind of want your attention, will be in the foreground. Then the instructions is forget about the breath, let go of it, and take this new foreground as the place where you develop your meditative awareness. Sensing it, feeling it, being present for it. If it disappears or is no longer compelling, then go continue with the breathing. If you're with some sensation in your body that's compelling, and then a new body sensation arises that's even more compelling, then let go of the first one and go take the new one. So whatever is the most pronounced, whatever most wants your attention, that's what gets your attention. Isn't that great? I think it's great. And if nothing particularly pronounced is happening, come back to your breathing. Now you want to give some emphasis on your breath, some priority to the breath. You want to be interested in your breathing. So part of what affects what's in the foreground and background of awareness has to do with what you're interested in. So you really want to have an interest in the breathing. If you're mostly interested in the stock market, then your mind's going to want to think that's really important. If you're mostly interested in, I don't know what, your physical comfort, then you're going to be really tuned in to physical discomfort, and it's going to end up in the foreground much sooner than it would otherwise. So interest affects what comes into the foreground to some degree. So my encouragement for you is to really give some interest, a little oomph behind being with the breath. But not so much that it becomes a war. Just as soon as something else really feels compelling, then let go of the breath and take that up as the meditative awareness. So that makes some sense. That's what you're supposed to do, is sense into it. Now, in that meditation that we did, I would like to hear from some of you what that was like, both the whole part of all of it, but in particularly the end of it, where I asked you actually to do that, to let go of the breath and find the strongest sensation in your body and just hold it in awareness. What happened when you did that? Or anything else during that meditation you want to talk about? Yes?
This really bad itch on my lip. I thought, I can't touch that because it's going to get worse. And I just had this fear that this itch was going to like take me over. It was very weird. But that was a sensation for me that I didn't want to look at it because I thought it was going to just really get bad. And I couldn't deal with it, but I stayed with it. But it was weird. I don't know if I wanted to just like sit there and look at pain. It's kind of a scary thing.
The pain or the itch?
Both. The sensations of the body. It just seems like the more you focus on them, I feel like they're going to take me away or take control of me.
Our psyche is quite complex. And the relationship between the mind and the body is kind of interdependent in some way. So sometimes the way in which we react to physical pain can sometimes reinforce it. So for example, if you have knee pain, for example, and you're sitting, if a person reacts to it, especially if its reaction is unconscious, then there's a tendency to tense around it. And the tensing around it can make the pain worse. Sometimes we get agitated because some people feel that it's a personal failure to have discomfort in the body. In California, everybody's supposed to have these wonderful, supple bodies and, you know, lots of pleasure. And it's not something, you know, something's spiritually wrong with the universe if you're feeling uncomfortable. Discomfort is built in part of being a human being. And a very important part of wise living is learning how to actually to be present for discomfort in a useful way. In order to learn how to do that, you have to begin by being present for it. You have to enter into that world. And you might be a transition time where it's a little bit awkward for you. But I'm pretty sure that within a short while, that you'll find a useful way to be present. And you find it very useful to be present for your body. It's so much benefit that comes from being present for your body. And I know a lot of people recoil from their body. But to overcome that tendency is really useful. So you have to develop patience. It's one of the qualities needed for meditation. So only one person had a strong sensation? Yes?
I actually asked the opposite experience, but I wasn't aware of being uncomfortable, but rather it was very pleasurable that I was conscious of my breath. And of my neck and my shoulders always being tight, I felt myself relax. And I actually experienced little popping as my muscles let go. And so for me, I don't think I was distracted by being uncomfortable, but rather I lavished in the feeling of letting go.
Great. Very nice. The word lavish is a strong word. You know, I don't want to take that wonderful lavishing away from you. The real kind of, this is what people don't like about mindfulness meditation, mm-hmm. is that the idea is the most powerful thing you can develop in meditation is a non-reactive awareness. Now, that's great when things are unpleasant. That seems, you know, useful. But when things are pleasant, who wants that? You know, then we just want to kind of indulge in it, right? So the idea, you're meditating really well to have those experiences. You're probably better off continuing the experience without, I don't know what lavishing means for you, but many people then will hold on to it or get attached to it. And then every time they sit down to meditate, they're expecting to have the same wonderful feeling. And there's all kinds of... The idea is not to have any experience, but to continue to develop a non-reactive awareness. What's happening now? What's happening now? But right now what's happening is great pleasure. Just, oh, that's what's happening now. As opposed to, oh, great pleasure. There's a little bit extra then. Someone else? Yes, please.
My back was kind of hurting. That was the number one thing I was noticing. And when I started to think about it, I don't know why, but I visualized the anatomy right there. And then, strangely, that went away. That pain went away. So then that's about when you sort of guided us to say the next thing. But the next thing didn't go away, so...
because the first one went away, and then you expect all the others will go away?
Well,
there's three things that might happen when you bring attention to sensations in your body. They could go away. They can get weaker and go away. They can get stronger, or they can stay the same. All three options are allowable.
That was surprising, though.
But it is a surprise, and often, more often than maybe you would expect. Simply bringing awareness to certain kinds of discomforts and tensions and pains in the body will somehow allow it to disappear. Will it unravel, unfold, relax? There's a number of things that might happen. And it can be very surprising. And it's part of the healing process for some people is to have these sensations disappear or fade away. And it's very helpful. The warning is don't expect it to always be the case. Because then you're likely to be disappointed. I'm not doing it right. How many of you had the experience of the sensations going away as you paid attention to them? How many had the experience of them getting stronger? And how many the sensations stay the same? We're all right on track. How many of you judged your experience, your sensation? How many assigned meaning to it? This means. How many of you didn't like it? How many of you liked it? All these things are normal. The trick is just to continue being mindful of what's going on and not believing, getting caught by any of the ideas and thoughts about what's happening. So any questions about what I've said so far? Yes, please.
What do you mean when you say develop an interest in your breath? How do you develop an interest in the breath itself?
Oh, how do you develop an interest? Well, the breath is very fascinating. But, you know, it's difficult for anyone to, you know, just to hear that from me. It's not very believable. But I'm hoping if I simply say that, maybe you'll give me a little bit of benefit of doubt. So, well, why does Gil say it's so interesting? He's been watching his breath for 25 years, and he's still interested in it. He's not bored yet. Why is that? You know, let me give it a second chance. Let me kind of...
Well, I guess my question is more... when you think of interest, when I think of interest, I think of analysis.
Oh.
I think of analysis, I think of mind. When I think of meditation, I think of being in awareness. And for some reason, awareness and interest don't jive for me.
Okay.
So I want to understand what you mean.
Okay. Well, that's very good. And so if your connotations of interest is analysis, then maybe the word interest is not useful. But what I mean by interest is getting to know the experience more carefully. Finding out what's there, not thinking about it, by sensing your way into the breath, discovering what's actually the details of the breath are, the sensual qualities of the breath. It's kind of like you know, if you're getting a massage, if you're not at all interested in the massage, but interested in, you know, the soap opera you watched that afternoon. And you're going over, you know, what's going to happen in the soap opera, and who's going to marry who, and who's going to divorce who, and whose child is that, and, you know, and you know, if that's what you're interested in, then you still get some benefits from the massage. But I think there's greater benefit in the massage if you have if you're really present for that experience and let the mind become still and really sense and be present for it and really feel the texture of the hands and. The texture of the masseuse's hand as they go kind of over the contours of your muscles and discover where are these muscles in my body and what do they feel like. So it's more like a silent exploration than it is analysis. Kind of like if you're in a, like an analogy I used, if you're in a dark cave and you need to discover the cave, you're very interested in the cave, but you're kind of feeling your way through the cave. You discover it through your senses. All your senses are open. You're sensing into it. It's like putting a magnifying glass at your experience and letting the experience show itself more clearly. Is this helping at all? That's what I mean by interest. Yes?
It would be helpful to me if you could review the foreground and the background as you were describing being with the breath as the foreground issue, but being willing to give it up if you found that your mind has slipped away. As you told the story, it started with the knee and then migrated, but as I have experienced it, it slips quietly through four steps, and there I am out there without the health care insurance for my family. And if I were to refocus on that, to make that my foreground, and allow my breathing to be in the background. I would like to know how to bring the kind of loving kindness, which you would, I think, where you're trying to migrate, meditation? Or are you suggesting that you just become aware of the other feelings that may arise?
Yeah, the practice is simply to become aware of whatever's in the foreground of attention. And if you're caught up in your thoughts and thoughts are in the foreground, then we practice mindfulness of thinking. However, that's for 2 weeks from now. So you're not supposed to be thinking for two more weeks, unless you're kind of eager for the advanced course. And for right now, the instructions are... what I meant with that, instructions are, if some bodily sensation, physical sensation arises for you as you're trying to stay with your breath, and the physical sensation is stronger, more compelling than your breathing, then take the physical sensation as the object of meditation. If you get caught up in your thoughts, or the tendency for that, don't follow those. Just notice you're in your thoughts, and then come back to your breathing, come back to the sensation in your body. Don't try to do elaborate mindfulness of thinking for another couple of weeks. Just kind of let go of it, let go of it, let go of it. And
I meant to stay with that part forever.
Yeah, that's right. You don't need... Could be wise. So physical sensations can also include sounds. So if you're sitting meditating at home in the morning... And the neighbor's dog begins barking one more time, really loudly. I finally took a meditation class, and finally, after years of wanting to meditate, I finally had gained enough discipline. I'm trying it out, these 20 minutes every morning, and I had everything set up perfectly. You know, I turned off the telephone, and I took a nice shower, and I made a really quiet, peaceful place in my house. And this dog is barking, I'm so too distracted, I can't meditate with this dog barking. And this is a disaster, I might as well clean the garage. The dog barking has become the predominant experience. That then becomes a meditation. And you do listening meditation, mindfulness of sounds. Hearing, listening to that. And there's no need to set up the dog barking in opposition to your meditation. Rather, the idea is to include it. If that really becomes the pronounced experience, if that really is really compelling for you, then just do a listening meditation and notice the quality, the texture, the flavor of that barking and be present for it. Notice the mind's tendency to get caught up in thoughts and ideas about it. Let go of those the best you can. Just stay with the raw, immediate experience of barking, of sound. What you're trying to do is develop your mindfulness, that non-reactive awareness for what's happening. And you can do that on anything. You can be on sounds, on bodily sensations, on the breath. And we'll talk next week about emotions and the following week about thoughts. And it can be kind of a feeling, kind of a... So we are trying to center mostly on the breath still. But as you freely, as necessary, leave the breath to attend to the other compelling sensations... There can be a feeling of kind of swimming through the sensations of experience. It's kind of like, oh, okay, there's a knee for a while, and you can stay with the knee maybe for a few moments, for a few minutes. If it's really compelling, some sensation in your body, you might be with it for 20 minutes, for a long time. It doesn't really matter. You might get bored, all kinds of things might happen. But that's just kind of grist for the mill for meditation. And the idea is just continue developing your mindfulness in that experience until something else becomes compelling. Or until it's not compelling and you can go back to your breathing. So kind of swimmingly, kind of gently, kind of allow yourself kind of in a relaxed way to move between one thing and another as different things become compelling. And for now, just stay with the breath or physical sensation. Keep your meditation limited to that for this next week. So other questions? Yeah, Lisa.
I set a timer for 15 minutes, and frequently it starts to feel interminable. I can't believe my timer hasn't stopped, and so I sneak a look to see how many minutes are left. And I wanted to know if that should be handled the same way as physical sensations. Like, if you can't hear, should you look, or should I just try not to look? We've never stopped.
So it's a regular pattern, and yeah, I think you should stop looking. And if you're following the sequence of this course, then for this week here, limit yourself to the physical sensation of restlessness or anxiety, whatever it is that comes up.
Yeah.
And just hang in there with the physical sensations. Don't psychoanalyze them or, you know, just be with the sensations. And it might feel like the rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay.
Okay.
Sometimes we're really restless when we meditate. A successful period of meditation, when we're really restless, is the fact that we got through it. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. And sometimes it's really hard. It's like the rodeo. And it's really useful to hang in there and not to break the meditation and not to let your compulsion or your anxiety, your restlessness get the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
One more, please.
My practice has changed now so that I sort of walk around the last 3 weeks with this sort of feeling of bliss and joy, and it gets quite frightening because my heart is racing like a mile a minute. My arm starts to shake. And at some point, it seems to me, maybe, you know, I'm not sure exactly when to stop. Should I plow, you know, plug ahead?
The bliss that you're experiencing, is it, does it happen always together with the racing heart?
No, sometimes it's okay. It's like something sort of opened and then sort of like this. I'm sort of... It's sort of this expansiveness here with me. And sometimes I want it to stay, and sometimes I'm looking forward to being gone.
It's a little bit hard for me to advise you with just in brief comments like that. But when there's an opening, and usually experiences of bliss and kind of what you're describing come with kind of a sense of opening, kind of going beyond the normal constrictions that we live by, it can be a transition time. And there can be a lot of psychophysical changes that result because of that. It's kind of like suddenly you entered into a much bigger room, and suddenly things have a chance to move around a little bit in there. And there can be energetically all kinds of changes. And one of the ones that can happen is the heart can begin racing. And probably it's going to be a temporary phenomenon. It probably needs to happen for a while. And just consider it to be part of the transition. If it frightens you, then you can back off. Either back off or come and find someone you can talk to who knows a little bit more about it and be reassured or hang in there with you. If these things continue for some time, the uncomfortable sensations connected to the bliss, you can come and talk to someone. You can come talk to me or someone, and you know, we can look at it in more detail. The other one thing you can do yourself, though, is you can begin exploring, investigating a little bit more what's actually going on when that happens. So just before the heart begins racing, what's happening within you? So it could be something as simple as when we open up, when there's a lot of bliss and kind of heart-opening kind of feelings that happen through spiritual practice, it can be very frightening for some people because suddenly you find yourself feeling much more vulnerable. You find yourself falling in love with people left and right. And it can be very confusing and frightening. And so there might be a little feeling of fear that arises. And the fear is what's causing the racing, for example. And so what you need to do is to learn how to come to terms with fear. Learn to investigate that more so that you can be wiser how to be open with that openness you're feeling. So those are some things. I don't know if they're helpful, but... So let's sit for a few more minutes. So take a comfortable, alert posture. And take a few moments to root yourself in your body, feeling the contact of your body against your chair or the floor. Feeling how your chair or your floor, the floor supports your weight. And with a way that's both relaxed and alert, sit up straighter, kind of like you're a dignified mountain. In the beginning of a meditation, it can be useful to take a few long, deep breaths, connecting to the body as you breathe in, letting go as you exhale. And then let your breathing return to normal. And it can also be helpful at the beginning of a meditation session to survey your body to see if there's any obvious muscle groups that can be relaxed in an easy way. Maybe the forehead, the jaws, maybe the shoulders can be softened slightly, more at ease. And perhaps you can soften your belly, relax the stomach. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of your breathing. Become aware of what it's like to breathe in. What happens in the body as you breathe in? Be aware of the exhalation. It's helpful if you entrust yourself to the experience of breathing. Entrust yourself to the breath. The breathing becomes one of your best friends as you learn to be present for it. And the mind has wandered off in thoughts. Simply, very simply, matter-of-factly, notice that. Be aware that that's happened. And then begin again with your breathing. To be mindful of the breathing is to be present for the sensations, the sensual, sensory quality of the breathing. The movement of the body as you breathe, the expansion and contraction, the tautness and the release of the tautness as you breathe in and out. If you're aware of the breath going in and out through the nostrils, the coolness as the breath goes in, and perhaps the warmth as you exhale. And then let go of the breathing. And now open your awareness to the sensations of your body in whatever way they appear. Be very relaxed, receptive, like awareness is a sponge that soaks up the sensations of your body anywhere they appear, coming and going, some stronger than the others. Whether your bodily experience is pleasant or unpleasant, hold it in a friendly way, gently. It's okay for the body to be whatever way it is. Hold it in awareness. And then in the last few seconds of the sitting, let go of mindfulness of your body and just sit here at ease, not doing anything at all in particular. Just simply here. As I've said, next week we'll talk about how to incorporate our emotional life, our emotions, as part of the mindfulness practice. It's a lot easier to understand how to do that if you have a basis of mindfulness of the body. If you begin exploring and familiarizing yourself with how to be a little bit more in your body and as you do this practice, it's going to be a lot easier to learn how to include the emotions. So not only in your sitting practice, but also as you go about your daily life, you might find it very helpful and very interesting to begin checking in with your body more often than you do. Finding opportunities in your daily life to just notice what's happening in your body. What are you feeling when you're having a conversation with someone? What are you feeling? If you're on the phone, for example, and not looking, they're not looking at you. So you just kind of check in with your body. How are you sitting? What's your posture like? When you're driving your car, when you're standing in line, when you're doing your work, or in any kind of circumstance at all, watching television at home, if you do such thing, just watch your body. Check in with your body more often than you do and see what you can learn from your body. See if you pay attention to what your body wants, whether it really wants to be sitting in the posture you're sitting in. Often, if we do things with our body without really paying attention to what the body most wants or what's appropriate for the body. It's very fascinating to begin living as if the body counted. So that's my words, what I have to say for today. Thank you. A couple of things. Those of you who are new might not know that we have a newsletter, and it's out there on the table. It looks like this, and it has a schedule of all the different events that we do during the week and during the months and stuff. So it might interest some of you to look at that. Some of you, probably all of you, were probably to some degree in shock and dealing with the events of September 11th, and I think for as individuals and as a society, it's going to be a long time for us to process those feelings and those reactions and thoughts and to know how to respond. And my hope is that this mindfulness practice is a great contribution for many people to learn how to be present for their experience and really allow it to be processed in a healthy way rather than to be carried away in unhealthy ways, unuseful ways by our feelings and fears and anger and things. This practice hopefully will make us into peacemakers to help our community. But because of this event, what I've done is I've scheduled I think it's maybe October 13th, a one-day kind of retreat class, one-day workshop on the Buddha's teachings on peace. So what the Buddha had to say about violence, non-violence, and different topics like that, there are many people who would like to have some religious grounding or reference or kind of for how to deal with these kinds of events. So that's what I could offer. And, so there's some flyers out there on the table for that, if any, that interests any of you. And the last thing is, for those of you who weren't here last week, this series, this class, is being offered on what's called dana in Pali, in Buddhism, which means a donation basis. And there's two baskets in the hallway. One has a little sign in the front that says rent dana, and that's to help us pay for the rent that we pay the friends for the use of this building. And and it's a few other expenses we have, like the newsletter and things. And if everyone did $1 or $2, that would be fine for us. That would be kind of cover our needs. And then there's another basket called teacher dana or donation, and that's whatever donation you'd like to make for me. So I thank you all, and I wish you all a wonderful week, and I'll see you next week.